Hey, my name is Chelsea Fagan, and I'm the founder and CEO of The Financial Diet, a totally independently owned and operated company of women who love to talk about money. Welcome to The Financial Confessions, a weekly show where we talk to people about their personal finances, their professional industry, and how money shapes their lives. You can listen to or watch new episodes of The Financial Confessions every week on YouTube or your preferred streaming platform. You can also support TFD and get exclusive access to our entire catalog of ad-free bonus videos, workshops, Discord community, our book club, and more by joining our members-only community on Patreon or YouTube. Our 2024 goal is to be primarily supported by our incredible community, and joining our membership program is the best way to do that. Enjoy the episode! This week, in keeping with this season's theme of talking to real people who are dealing with real actual financial struggles in addition to financial triumphs, jobs that are not social media influencer or best-selling author, and just generally all angles of financial relatability, we are speaking to someone today who checks quite a lot of boxes in terms with dealing with things that a lot of people in life end up dealing with financially, professionally, etc. She's someone who has navigated these situations with grace. She even has a podcast where she talks really candidly about these subjects. But she is someone who, in the span of just a few years, paid off $40,000 in debt, got divorced, and lost her job. So talk about the peaks and valleys of financial living. She has definitely been through, if not at all, quite a bit of it, and is gracious enough to speak with us really openly about all of those subjects and the implications they have, financial and otherwise. My guest today is one Miss Alex Ofor.
Hi. Well, I just want to say, first of all, I feel like this is a total pinch me moment. First, let me introduce myself. Hey, everyone. My name is Alex. I am 29 years old. I live in the Atlanta area. I work full time in marketing, but I also have a podcast called Financial Flex with Lex that I just do as a hobby. But back to me fangirling over speaking with you today. Like, this is just insane. Like, I can't even believe I'm chatting with you. It's crazy.
You are too kind, and I'm so, so grateful to be speaking to you as well, because as I mentioned, you have quite a wealth of different experiences that you are, you know, open and candid about, where I feel like a lot of other people aren't. And as soon as you reached out, we put you in touch with actually our Alexis, who handles all of our booking, because we were like, we've got to get her on the show. Now, just to kind of start it off, so to set a timeline, you paid off your $40,000 of debt in 2021. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
And then in 2023, that's when you had both your divorce and your job loss.
Yep.
So all in a really kind of short span of time. So to start with the debt, can you break down what comprised that $40,000 worth of debt and what your approach to paying it off was?
Yeah, definitely. So that $40,000 all came from student loans. I graduated college in 2016, and it wasn't until the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, that I decided to tackle paying off my debt. It wasn't something that I even thought I could do in a few years. My ex-husband at the time, who was with my boyfriend, I was over at his house complaining about money, like just so stressed out about it. And his dad overheard me in the kitchen and was like, well, do you have a budget? And I'm like, no, I don't. And he was like, okay, well, like, let's sit down, make one. And as we were making my budget, he was like, you know, if you really buckle down, you could probably pay off your debt in 2 years. And I'm like, wait, what? Because I had in my mind that I was just gonna, you know, pay them off by the time I was like 50 or 60. And I'm like, well, if this is actually possible, then like, I'm game. And so I kind of just took the information that he gave me and ran with it like so hard. So 2017, I really started to get laser focused on paying off debt. 2019, I got married. During that time, we pushed, like, I wasn't paying as much toward my debt because we cash flowed the wedding because we didn't want to go into debt just to have a wedding. And so once we got married in 2019, We started, we paid off his student loan debt, which was, he had about 10,000 remaining. So we paid that off. And then we started to attack mine. And I honestly, like, I credit like the pandemic for us being able to pay as much as we did, because during those 2 years, no interest was accruing. And thankfully we were in the position where we both still had our jobs and we were like, okay, well, when will there ever be a time for like where no interest is accruing on our student loans? Like, we might as well just like get it out the way while we can. So we made the decision to break our lease at our apartment at the time and move in with his parents. So we stayed there for 2 years while we paid off the remainder of my student loan debt.
And just for the record, we do have a lot of questions from our audience about your story, which we will get to. But in the meantime, so to kind of move through the timeline, so you make all of these, you know, you accomplish all of these huge financial achievements, you're in a really good space financially, and then, you know, a year later, essentially, you have in the same year a divorce and loss of your full-time income. Can you walk us through, I mean, obviously, you don't need to share the details of your divorce from an emotional perspective or anything, but from a financial logistical perspective, can you talk about navigating those two things in such a short span of time? Because I know for most people, those are two of the most potentially financially devastating events that one can really go through.
Yeah, I mean, it was insane. I will say that I think my divorce may differ a little bit in the fact that we hadn't really accrued much assets together. So it wasn't like we had a house. We didn't have, you know, we didn't keep our finances joint. Like, we always had my account and his account. And like, if we ever needed money from each other, it's like, oh, like, let's just send it via like Cash App, Zelle, like whatever kind of thing. So when it came to the separation, it was more so like, okay, well, these are the items that we have, like household items, like living room stuff, like we'll sell that and split everything down the middle. Like, it was very much like that. There was something that, so I don't know if you were aware, but like, when it was, you know, when there were talks about student loans being forgiven, if you had been making payments during the pandemic, you could ask for a refund and get that money back. And so we had done that. And so I had gotten a Pell Grant while I was in school. So that qualified me to get the, like, if student loans were forgiven, I would have gotten that $20,000 forgiven. So we requested a refund for $20,000 back from my student loan providers. We got that back. And so part of it was sitting in my account and part of it was sitting in his account. And even though I was down bad, like I feel like I can't talk about my divorce without mentioning the emotional aspect of it. Like, it was by far the toughest thing I ever had to deal with, probably not only in my adult life, but just in my life, period. And I was just emotionally like not okay. But I was like, I need to make sure that I get in writing that they're like, I need to draft up like a janky little contract and make sure that like that money goes back to my student loan provider. So I'm not like, once this divorce is finalized, I'm not on the hook for, you know, $20,000 that I've essentially already paid back. So financially, for the most part, it was pretty smooth, pretty clean, pretty easy. I had to kind of stand up for myself and make sure that like I did things that were in my best interest, even though it felt weird. And that's pretty much how it went. We didn't have much, so it was pretty easy to split everything, to be honest.
Well, on that note, you know, with it being so emotionally devastating, you know, when you reached out to us and kind of shared a little bit about your story, like a lot of it is obviously very financial and logistical in nature, but, you know, one would imagine, I mean, listen, I'm sure there are some couples who consciously uncouple and it's like, we loved, we must say goodbye. And then they, you know, walk their separate ways and become best friends. I'm sure that happens. But for a lot of people, you know, it's a very profound form of grief to lose your spouse, your partner. It's not dissimilar from other forms of grief. And, you know, we've spoken before on the channel with people who, for example, lost a loved one and had to navigate the finances of that while also dealing with this enormous emotional burden. Can you talk a little bit about the practicalities of, like you said, you know, drafting up legal frameworks, advocating for yourself, managing the financial aspect of it as someone who is very financially savvy, while also kind of giving space to, you know, the emotional trauma that you were going through?
Yeah, it's like wearing two different hats, because it was really hard for me to be very like logical, cut and dry, black and white, because it was like, this was at one time like my best friend. And it's like, I'm used to caring about this person's feelings. And not that I don't have to care about this person's feelings, but I am now putting myself first, because divorce turns people into someone else. And it may not even be like any fault of their own. It's just the emotions. Like, it's just a really, really emotional thing. And especially if you feel like you've been wronged or slighted, or you feel like you've been putting your emotions and your feelings on the back burner for so long that, like, now that everything's blown up, you're like, screw it. Like, I'm going to put myself first, and I don't really care about what this other person has to say or do or think or feel. So it was really hard for me, because I'm someone who, I don't really like confrontation. I like everything to be at peace, good vibes. Like, that is just how I roll. And I'm also like a people pleaser. So for me, and to be completely candid, like, I was trying to save my marriage. I was like, well, maybe if I concede, maybe if I try to be a little bit nicer, maybe there is some saving in this. And then eventually it got to the point where I almost felt like, I want to be careful about how I phrase this. I don't want to say that I felt like I was being bullied, but I felt like my voice just wasn't being heard, and that I had to do whatever it was that person wanted. And eventually I just had to find my voice and say, okay, well, I have to stick up for myself. I'm so thankful that I have all of these years of financial knowledge that I'm able to, like, you know, I'm able to like like have access to our bills or credit card accounts or whatever. Like, I know all these informations. So like, I don't have to talk to you if I don't want to, because I didn't like stick my head in the sand while we were married and like ignore our finances. I was very much like involved in our finances. And so with whatever information that I needed, I was able to get. But yeah, it was really hard, and it was really tough to navigate, because it was like, I still care about this person, I still care about how they feel, but then it got to a point where I was like, okay, I have to put myself first. Like, I am kind of wasting away here, and if I don't know what will happen to me if I continue down that path, so I have to just like stand up for myself.
When you mentioned that divorce can bring out, you know, essentially a really ugly version of yourself. You know, we've had divorce lawyers on the show before who talk a lot about that. And obviously when divorce gets very acrimonious, nobody benefits really except for the lawyers at that point. You know, do you have a piece of advice for people who are navigating a divorce to hopefully do what they can, even if, let's be honest, there are many circumstances of divorce where one party does something incredibly odious to the other person. You know, they cheat on them, they betray them, they abuse them. All kinds of things happen to, you know, end a marriage in ways that are inherently not amicable. But through the logistical, legal, financial process, in terms of minimizing the extra time, damage, potential legal fees, all of that, do you feel like you have advice for someone navigating that situation?
Yeah, I think I would tell someone what one of my best friends, Shayla, told me was just keep your character intact. When I was going through my divorce, I didn't know anyone that was like my age going through a divorce outside of my friend. And so when she was one of the first people that I called up, and just that was a piece of advice that she told me, was just like, never let them question you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Her character. And I just kept that mantra in my head through it all. Divorce is emotional. It's exhausting. It's just, honestly, I wouldn't wish it on like my worst enemy. It's just a drain. But keeping your composure really makes all the difference. And it's like, even though you may not be able to control how someone else treats you, how they respond to you, whatever, like you have all the power to control how you respond. And I think that's really empowering, because in a divorce, sometimes it feels like, especially if you're the party that doesn't want it, you feel like you have no power. You feel like my whole entire life is blown up. I have no control over anything. And like, this just sucks. But if you just take a second to breathe and just be like, okay, like, I know this is a really emotional time for me, but I have to just take a deep breath and respond with kindness or whatever. Even if the other person doesn't want to, even if they've done me wrong, whatever, like, I think that's just like the best route to go. I think it made a world of difference for me in my case, just keeping that, okay, I have to keep my character. I have to keep my character, because it's like, by you like popping off, getting upset, you know, just doing whatever, that's just like awful. It just makes the situation worse, I think, in my opinion.
Well, to move along the timeline of things that, you know, you've kind of been through in the past few years. So your divorce took place in 2023. Where along that process did you also lose your job?
Yeah. So let's see. We separated December of 2022. I moved back home to my mom February of 2023. So I was still grieving, just trying to wrap my mind around everything. But I'm like, okay, even though my relationship has like fallen apart, at least I still have my job. And that job was really like, I was really, I guess you could say, proud of that job, because I had pivoted from entertainment into tech. And so I was making like, I had doubled my salary. I was making the most I'd ever made. And I'm like, okay, well, even though my relationship failed, at least everything's good on the job front. And I can kind of rebound from this divorce. I can rebuild my savings. You know, I'm saving money by, you know, moving back home. And then it was June of 2023 that I got laid off. And I had some feelings even like at the top of the year. I was like, okay, like, I don't know, like, I could just tell. I'm like, I wouldn't be surprised if I were to, like, if we were to go through another round of layoffs, if I were to be impacted. So I had started stashing like a little bit of extra money aside just in case. But yeah, so June of 2023 is when I lost my job.
Now, how, like, going through what you were already going through, and you were also still living back at home with your parents, which I know for a lot of adults can be in and of itself an emotional reckoning. How, like, not to put this so bluntly, but like, how did you not have like a total breakdown when you also lost your job?
Honestly, like, I don't even know. I was just like, what? Like, I was like, is this my karma? Did I do something wrong in a past life? Like, what is happening? Like, I just could not. I was like, great. Like, what else could go wrong? But I also think that I was just like so shook from my divorce that like my layoff was kind of like, I think I handled it a lot better because I was just like, well, I mean, I've already gone through like the worst of the worst. So like, what's next kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, I struggled. Like, I honestly just felt like, I kid you not, like the world's biggest loser, honestly. Aww. Like, even though divorce, layoffs, having to move back home with your parents, like all of that stuff, I'm not the first person to ever go through that. That's so normal. But like, I just felt like the biggest loser because it was like these things that give me, I guess, my identity, quote unquote, had all been ripped away from me in a matter of months. Like being a wife, being a professional, losing my apartment and having to go back home. Like all of these things that I assigned value to, like deep value, it was just like, yeah, I was just like, wow, like who am I? Who is Alex? Like what is happening right now? That's definitely how I felt.
You know, it's funny that you say that, like, in some ways already going through like the craziness of the divorce, like my problems last year were very, very different from what you went through. And, you know, at a different scale, yours were obviously, I think, much worse in a lot of ways. But by the time this airs, I will have done a video on the subject. But I talked about it a little bit in a previous video, but like I had a very, very difficult, especially like Q3, Q4 of 2023 for a lot of like financial professional reasons. And like something really bad happened like toward the end of the year that like I think in other circumstances I would have lost it. But in some ways I almost just like started laughing. I was like, this is so comical at this point. Like truly throw it on the pile at this point. Who cares? And I think there is something to, you know, so much, it's like a cliche to say, but I think it's true that so much of our worst fears do lie in anticipation and in the unknown and in anxiety. And in some ways, like you said, having all of these experiences of losing, I mean, really kind of experiencing ego death in a way and losing all of these images of yourself and all of these things, like having so many worst case scenarios come to pass, I imagine on some level, it has to be almost empowering at a certain point because there's very little left to fear, you know?
Yeah, that was said so perfectly. Yeah, there really wasn't anything left to fear. I'm like the only thing at that point that could have been taken away from me was like, my health. Like yeah. That was it. I was just like, okay, like there's nothing left and this is what life is and I just have to take it one day at a time and get through it.
Well, on that note, so, you know, having gone from like, you're someone who, for example, in your debt payoff, like you did everything right, so to speak. And, you know, just kind of generally in the way you approach life and, you know, with your podcast and things like that, you seem like, you know, a very pragmatic person who really takes, you know, a very active role in, you know, life planning, financial planning, all that stuff. I don't know you well enough to make a type A assumption, but it's definitely giving light type A vibes. And I think for a lot of people, there is often a feeling of bitterness and resentment. And I think that can come at any time, but especially if in like your case, you did so many things right. And, you know, you made a lot of sacrifices to, for example, pay off your debt. And then all of this stuff kind of happens. Like, do you feel like you had to do any kind of grieving or kind of mental health work specifically as it pertained to, like you said, coming to grips with like feeling like something was wrong with your karma or like, why do I in particular deserve this when you had made so many good decisions?
Oh, 100%. Like the minute that I went through my divorce, I got right back into therapy. So I had been doing therapy like earlier that year, but had stopped. And then as soon as I was going through my separation divorce, I was like, okay, like I need to take care of my mental because this is just too much. Like it was just all consuming. It was all I could think about. And so through therapy, I was able to shift my perspective. And also too, I will say, I feel like my faith played a big part in it as well. But I shifted my perspective from why is this happening to me to what is this trying to teach me? What is this trying to show me? And so it kind of took me out of this like victim role that I was playing the role real well. And it took me out of that and to be like, okay, well, what lessons can I learn here? And one of the things that my therapist said to me that I'll never forget is, oh, great, how on brand now, I'm forgetting. Man, what did he, he told me, you know, life will keep giving you the same lessons until you learn from them. And so I had to do some real looking in the mirror. And that was difficult because it's so easy to point the finger and blame, well, you did this, my company did this, or they didn't. Like, it's so easy to point the fingers. But then when you drop that finger, look yourself in the mirror and say, okay, we're here now. What part did you play to get here? And try not to beat yourself up over it, but let's see how we can course correct, change, and become a better version. I think taking that approach changed the game for me, because instead of playing the victim, beating myself up and staying down, I empowered myself to keep going. And I think with the combination of one, my faith, two, therapy, and three, leaning on my community, I think those three things combined really helped me kind of just like move through the journey. It was long and it's exhausting and I'm still going through it. I'm a lot better today than I was. Like, if you had spoken to me last year, tears, I wouldn't have been able to do this interview. Like, it just, absolutely not. But I think those three things, and just also knowing that, like, okay, things are going to get better. Like, there will, like, there's another side. There's a quote by Maya Angelou that I like, that's like, every storm runs out of rain. That's something I kept in my mind too. I'm like, every storm runs out of rain. Like, this sucks, but I will get through it. There will be better days ahead, even though I can't see it right now.
As someone who's been very active on the internet for the past decade plus, more years than I would like to admit, and has put a lot of my personal life out for the public to consume, I'm always thinking about how that could make me vulnerable in some ways. And it's not just people like me who have a public platform. For all of us, the data that we have just kind of lingering around the internet can have real consequences if the wrong people get a hold of it. I'm personally making an effort this year to be smarter about my tech and data habits, and that's why I'm thrilled to have our friends from Delete Me back with us for this season of TFC. As you know, all season long here on TFC, we'll be chatting with relatable guests who have dealt with or are currently going through a wide range of personal and financial issues. While many of these hardships could never have been avoided due to circumstance, it's important to do what you can to protect yourself in the situations you do have control over. That's why I personally recommend and actually use Delete Me. I remember the first time I got my Delete Me report, I was completely shocked at how many places my data had gotten to without me realizing it. I felt very vulnerable, honestly, the first time I looked at it, but after that I felt very empowered because I knew I was finally doing something about it. And as some of you might remember, earlier this year my Twitter got hacked, so I was especially coming off of a time where I wanted to be extra cautious about my internet safety. And the report made me feel like I was doing the right thing. You don't realize how much of your information is available to scammers and people with ill intent on the internet, and unfortunately how susceptible you and your family are to identity theft and fraud. But now you can get your data removed with Delete Me. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal info from the largest people search databases on the web, and in the process helps prevent identity theft, doxing, and phishing scams. Delete Me finds and removes the personal information you don't want online, and makes sure it stays off. Sign up and provide Delete Me with exactly what information you want deleted, and their experts will take it from there. Delete Me sends you regular personalized privacy reports showing what they found, where they found it, and what they removed. Delete Me isn't just a one-time service. They're always working for you, constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me.
now at a special discount for our listeners. Today, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/TFC and use promo code TFC at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/TFC and enter code TFC at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/TFC, code TFC. You mentioned your faith helping you get through. I know for a lot of people who are, you know, for whom religion is a big part of their life, obviously it can bring wonderful things. But in the case of things like, for example, divorce, a lot of religion and specifically religious communities can hold a lot of shame and stigma and a sense of failure around something like divorce. Can you talk about if that kind of played any role in your emotions of separation? And if so, kind of how you got to a healthier sort of unburdened place with making the right decision for you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely did feel there was a bit of anxiety of like, oh, well, like, what will people think? What will people say? But ultimately, I had to do what was best for me. So to be completely candid, like, I wasn't the one who filed for divorce. I was just on the receiving end. And I was like, okay, well, if this is what this person wants, then like, so be it. Like, it is what it is. I can't force anyone to stay married if they don't want to be. Like, we all have free will. But I did have anxiety around like, well, what will people at church think? What will people say? But ultimately, it really just boiled down to this is my life. And I mean, I have to do what's best for me. Like, you're not at home with me going through all of the mental gymnastics and emotional anguish that I'm feeling. And quite honestly, like, if you don't have an encouraging word for me, then like, I'm not going to be rude about it, but like, I'm just going to keep pushing. So that's really how I navigated it. And I'm really thankful that the church that I attend, everyone was so supportive. There were people who literally would work all day, come to my apartment and just sit on my couch with me and just like be there with me as I like cried. Or they would call me and be like, I'm thinking of you or what have you. So I'm really thankful that like my community was, you know, super supportive, and I didn't experience a ton of like negativity around my divorce. It was more so like, how can we be of service to you? How can we help you? And I think also going through my divorce, I was able to, to get my mind off of it because it was so consuming. I was like, who needs help? How can I, like, is there someone that's sick and shut in that I can go visit? Like, does anyone need any errands run, like to be run? Like, I can help you, like that kind of thing. So yeah, that's really how I just like, I navigated that time, was just like, if you don't have an encouraging word for me, then, you know, respectfully, thanks, but no thanks.
Bye. So as I mentioned, we got a lot of questions from our audience for you. So just going through a few of them, how did your experiences shape your perspective on emergency funds and financial preparedness for unexpected life events?
Oh, man. I could just give 23-year-old Alex the biggest hug and be like, thank you, thank you, thank you for taking the time to learn about personal finance and getting your ducks in a row. Because my experience going through a divorce, going through a layoff, would have been exponentially harder had I had no financial literacy, had I had no emergency savings. Like, my emergency savings, like right now, I'm in this, it's really annoying because I feel like I can never get myself to a fully funded emergency fund because something's always happening in my life, like literally always. And it's so frustrating. And even though it's really annoying, I'm so thankful that I have money to help with whatever emergency that I'm going through, because that's avoided me having to get into credit card debt in order to cover my expenses. So, I mean, it's just been a game changer, like it, 100%.
We stan a personal finance preparedness queen.
Yeah.
Including our past selves. Out of curiosity, are you still living with your parents or are you moved into your own place now?
No, I moved into my own place. I moved in the first week of December. It was just like I had just been feeling for months that it was like I was like it's just time for me to go. And so yeah, I have my own place and I'm so excited. I love it.
That's amazing. And it is, you know, it's always important to note that being able to move back in with family is definitely a privilege that not everyone has for sure. But I know it can be very difficult to navigate in the moment emotionally, logistically. So it must be such a nice moment to have your own place again.
Yes.
This person says, how do you balance financial aspiration with still maintaining a healthy mindset and overall well-being throughout your financial journey?
I would say just boils down to being content with what you have, being content with what you have in the moment, but also still going after those aspirations and planning accordingly. I'm someone who dreams really big. Like I have this goal right now that I want to reach $100,000 net worth by the time I'm 35. Not really sure if I'm going to hit it, but I'm making small steps to get there. But I've learned that like I can't stress myself out over how I'm going to get there. Instead, just take it one day at a time and, you know, just enjoy the fact like, okay, I'm making this much money. This is where I'm at in life. Like I'm okay with where I'm at, but I'm still going to work towards and actively put in the work to get to where I want to be.
One thing I'm curious about is having gone through this experience with your divorce, and now you're 29, right? Soon to enter your 30s. Do you have any kind of framework for yourself about how you plan to approach dating with all of this kind of experience behind you?
I've literally been thinking about that because my therapist had recommended that I do not date for at least a year. So I'm coming on like a full year of being like single. And I'm like, okay, I think I'm kind of ready to start dating. But it's just, man, the discussions on social about like dating, especially I feel like in the Black community, is just so insane that it makes me anxious. So I haven't really given too much thought into like how I'm going to navigate dating. I especially too when it comes to finances, like I don't know.
As someone who does not get targeted with dating content generally, because I think the algorithm knows I've just been with my husband for since social media has existed, what about the dating conversation that you see happening kind of gives you anxiety?
Oh my gosh. It's like, okay, this whole like, you like coffee dates. Like, coffee dates are like not a thing. Like, if a guy wants to take you on a coffee date, it's like absolutely not. That's so bare minimum. Like, it needs to be like full on, full course meal kind of vibe, or just like how the dating pool is like completely trash. There's piss in it. Like, it's just hopeless. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I literally can't. And also, too, there's this thing, where I feel like in the Black community, and I talk about it with my friends a lot. It's just that it feels like a lot of Black women, like not saying that we have it all together, but like a lot of us, you know, we have good jobs, we have our degrees, like things like that, and we're trying to like get ourselves on track. And then I hear that like, oh, like Black men, like they just don't have as much ambition or like whatever, or they're not where we are, so it's hard, or they're like intimidated by the fact that like, you know, you may look like you have it all together, like that kind of thing. I'm just like, oh, like, I don't know. So, yeah, those are the kind of conversations that are happening. I actually took a break from social because I was just getting fed that kind of content all the time. And it was just like too overwhelming. So I was like, okay, I need to remove myself.
That makes sense. Well, that's really interesting that you're about to come up on a year post-divorce and you can finally start dating. It's a very interesting time in your life to date because I feel like, yes, a lot of people by that time have already found a long partner, but definitely not everyone. Also, people haven't that much started getting divorced yet. Like, I'm 35. My single friends who are around my age, they're now starting to enter a dating pool where like a lot of the people in their dating pool are like they've already been married, often they have children, things like that. So it's an interesting age.
Yeah, definitely.
So you started your podcast, Financial Flex with Lex, to document your own financial journey. Is that fair to say? what role, this person is basically saying in so many words, like, what role does having the accountability of a podcast play in, like, shaping your actual financial decisions?
Oh, it holds you accountable because it's like, I'm telling all of these people, like, this is what I'm going to do. And so therefore, I like, you feel the need to kind of like update them on your goal. And so in order to give updates, you actually have to do what you're going to say. Like, you're going to have to actually put in work to do whatever it is that you said you were going to do. So yeah, it definitely keeps you very much like accountable, at least for me anyway, because also too, I would have people messaging me and being like, oh, because of you, like, I've considered starting to like pay off my car note, or I've, you know, finally looked to see how much I owe on student loans and all of those things. And just hearing that makes you like motivated to keep going.
One question that we get a lot when we have someone on the show who can speak to the topic of divorce is, so women initiate, I think it's 70% of divorces. Obviously, that was not your case, but the majority of time women initiate them. And the thinking kind of goes that there probably would be even more divorces if everyone were totally financially independent. Do you have reservations about either getting married again or totally combining finances again? Because it sounds like you were very heavily combined financially with your boyfriend before you even got married. Essentially, like, how would you navigate your finances differently in a second marriage, if at all? Because a lot of the questions that we get around this topic are, you know, women who are in situations where they theoretically might want to get divorced, but it's not a financial option, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm. It's funny because I was thinking about this the other day, like just randomly. Getting a prenup wasn't something that was even a thought in my mind when I got married the first time, but it's something that I definitely think I would think about the second time around. Like, I think going through what I've been through, there is this reservation of like, okay, like, how do I, like, honestly, like, if I do get married again, I really would love for it not to end in divorce because it's so much. I'm like, how do people do this multiple times? It's insane. But I would definitely consider a prenup, because assuming that, like, I don't know, I get married in the next couple of years, well, this time around, I will have, like, you know, hopefully a good amount of assets, like, to my name. And the fact that I am debt-free, it also kind of makes me uncomfortable thinking about, like, someone coming in to the, like joining forces with someone who's, like, saddled with, like, a whole bunch of debt. Like, that's something I'm honestly still trying to, like, work through in my mind. And it's not like I'm getting married tomorrow, so it's kind of like I have time to think about it. But yeah, I think I would definitely consider a prenup and maybe just like go from there. I really don't know.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because you mentioned earlier how part of what was really hard about everything you went through in 2023 was those losses of identity, one right after the other, like losing the identity of wife, losing the identity of someone who lived independently, losing the identity of your prestigious tech job. Like, and it sounds like being debt-free is also a very important part of your identity. So I wonder, for you, in thinking about, you know, your comfort level of marrying someone who does have debt, like, to what extent that feels to you like a question of identity more than practicality, right? Because, like, if they do have debt and they're able to pay it off comfortably, like, that shouldn't be a problem financially.
Yeah. Wow. That's something I never really even thought about. I think you're right. I think I do, like, debt-free has become, for sure, like, I hate to say, like, a personality trait, but yeah, it kind of has for me, because it's just like, I don't know. I never honestly thought about that.
Well, I think in the personal finance community, especially, and, like, you know, having your podcast and being really informed on personal finance and stuff, like, people do tend to kind of like fetishize these aspects of your financial identity, like, you know, you people who own their homes outright, who are debt-free, who, you know, don't have credit cards, who, like, there are all these different things, and, like, or who are FIRE, you know, And some of them I understand honestly more than others. Like, I think people who like won't use credit cards at all, I think that's silly, honestly. It works against you in a lot of ways. But I do think for a lot of the personal finance community, like people who get really good with money, it kind of becomes a really core part of their identity, and it becomes like, it has like a moral value, if that makes sense. Like, it feels like a reflection of their character. And I do think, like, thinking about like being in the dating world, like to not take on, because like, for example, if you were to date a doctor, statistically, it's almost certain that they would have a lot of student debt, right? I mean, they would probably have a really high paying job to pay it. But like, it is interesting how much in my opinion, like the kind of negative interpretation of personal finance can result in like these really binary black and white ideas about money and what it means, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's like a really good insight that you have. And I think that especially I do consume a lot of like I do follow a lot of like personal finance, like influencers. And it's funny because on my journey to becoming debt free, like a huge factor that motivated me was the fact that like life just seemed so good on the other side of paying off debt. And then it's like when I finally got to that other side, I'm looking around and I'm like, wait, like it's not as great as you guys. I mean, like it's, I have to be careful because it is a huge privilege. It's a huge blessing to be able to be debt free. Like and it has afforded me in a lot of ways, like a lot of privilege, and I'm very thankful for that. But I assumed that, okay, once I become debt free, all of my problems, all of my financial anxiety will immediately go away, and I'll just have all of this extra money to like stash away and do whatever with because of like these people that I've been following for years and like seeing their lives play out online. And then when I finally got into like the room or got into the club, I'm like, wait a minute, like my financial anxiety hasn't gone away. Like I haven't been able to like save a crap ton of money because it's like I've been having to deal with like other life issues that pop up. Like life doesn't stop. Also the fact that I was in a relationship at the time becoming debt free and now I'm no longer, it's like navigating that. And that's something I also haven't really seen a lot in the personal like finance community. It's like usually when a couple pays off their debt, they like stay together and their bond is so much stronger and they are just like a force to be reckoned with. And so I'm just kind of like, not that I feel like I've been sold a lie. I don't think that, but I'm just like, wow, my experience is a lot different than like what I've been consuming online. That's interesting.
I mean, you say that, but there's been a lot of divorces in the personal finance community, a lot. I don't think they talk about them very much, but like a lot of the men in the personal finance community have gotten divorced. And I say personal finance kind of generally because I think it's like the overlap of like pure money stuff and then like the like life hacking advice bro type stuff. But like a lot of those men have gotten divorced. I think much less so the women influencers in the space. And I think part of the reason why divorce has been common amongst a lot of the male influencers, and to your point, as far as like not seeing it covered or addressed, is I think they will often avoid talking about it, quite honestly, because it doesn't line up necessarily with their personal brand. But I think part of the reason why it's not that uncommon is because in a lot of the cases of these men, like the wives were doing like basically all of the child rearing, domestic labor. Like the wives were kind of just like doing everything in the background while the men were able to, you know, not just build this brand and, you know, this kind of media empire and this public facing persona, but also, you know, all of their various revenue streams and all of the things that made them, you know, financial icons. And I think that is one thing that really doesn't get addressed a lot is like, for the most part, women who are in this community or otherwise, like women who are, you know, making money, building these platforms, you know, educating all of that stuff, they're usually also doing a lot at home as well. You know, it's not nearly as common for in this dynamic for like the woman to have like essentially a stay-at-home dad or the man who takes on the majority of the labor. And when you look at like what leads a lot of women to divorce, it is that dynamic of like they're expected to basically do everything, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So as a remaining question, so we have two left. Okay. Number one is, can you share insights into the financial adjustments that you had to make following your divorce in 2023, specifically as it pertains to like, as we all know, it's a lot cheaper to live as a couple than as an individual. So like, can you talk about like specific adjustments you had to make?
Yeah. So let's see. I'm still in the middle of like trying to adjust because I've only been living on my own for like the last two months. So I think like paying rent by myself has been like a huge adjustment. So when I was looking for an apartment, I was really strict on like, okay, it has to be what like the 30% rule for has to be like 30%, like less than 30% of like your take home pay or like something like that. But I was, you know, really strict on like what I could afford as far as rent goes. Grocery shopping has been like insane. So I'm trying to keep that under like $100 a week because I'm like, it's just me. It's a lot cheaper to feed one than it is to feed two. What else? I think those are like the two biggest adjustments I had to cut out. So I was someone that like, I loved to get my nails done. I have become like a press-on girly. Right now, my nails look kind of look like crap. So there's that. But yeah, so like not going to the nail salon because it was insane. Like I was like, I cannot be paying like $100 to $200 like every 2 weeks to get my nails done. Like that's crazy. And I think the one of the biggest adjustments is that even though I work full time and full transparency, I make $73,000 a year. Like I picked up a second job because like my financial anxiety was like, I just felt like between like after taxes and like putting money away for like retirement, all that stuff. I was like, I didn't feel comfortable with what I was left with every paycheck. So I was like, okay, then I just have to get a part-time job. Like I'm thankful enough that like my full-time job doesn't leave me mentally drained by the end of the day. So I picked up a job at like a fitness boutique and I'll be working there like 20 hours a week. So I think those are like the biggest adjustments that I've had to make.
That is a lot of work. You better be careful. Don't burn yourself out. Okay. So as a last question, what is the single biggest insight that you gained about managing finances during periods of significant life transition, such as paying off debt, going through a divorce, losing a job, et cetera?
Probably that you have to stay on top of it. Like it's not something that you can just like passively do. You really have to be intentional with the time that you set aside to like review your finances and make adjustments as needed, because if not, things will get out of control real fast. I think that's like the biggest thing that I've learned. And it just like keeps you on track. And if you have a specific goal, like getting out of debt, being able to set that time aside to like have a little financial check-in with yourself, I think it like moves the needle more than you think it would.
I think that's really true. Well, Alex, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. I mentioned a couple times you have a podcast, but please tell everyone what it's called and where they can listen to it.
Yeah, so my podcast is called Financial Flex with Lex. It's available wherever you listen to your podcast. And there's a my Instagram account, it's like of the same name, Financial Flex Podcast. And like I said earlier, this is like such a pinch me moment. I'm so thankful that I've been able to like chat with you. Like it's just insane. When I was going through my debt-free journey, like the financial diet was one of the places where I got all of my financial information from. So I mean, to be like sitting here talking with you, it's just like insane. So thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I'm so flattered. Thank you for coming on and for sharing your story. I feel like I learned so much from this conversation and it's just been delightful talking to you. So thank you again, Alex, for being here. And thank you all at home for tuning in. And we will see you back here next Monday for an all new episode of the Financial Confessions. Bye, everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us, and be sure to tune in next week for an all-new episode of The Financial Confessions. The Financial Confessions is created by The Financial Diet and hosted by me, Chelsea Fagan. It is produced by Alexa Brooks Major and Holly Trantham. Recording and editing by Emily Fisher, and music and sound effects are from Epidemic Sound. Want more of our content? Head over to our YouTube page, The Financial Diet, to see our monthly deep dives, videos of this show, and our entire backlog of videos and podcasts. I'll talk to you next week.